So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Super Together. I am James Cochran, and with me today is the esteemed licensed clinical marriage and family therapist, licensed marriage and family therapist, certified Daring Way facilitator, and all around great gal, Melissa D. Kincheloe. Did I get all that right?
You did. No, okay. You nailed it.
So Melissa and I go way back. Our internships overlapped when we were in graduate school. And for a brief time early in my career, we shared a space together, which is a braggadocious way of saying that she let me rent a room from her once a week. And I found that to be a really valuable season. I guess we also did supervision together for a little while.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. So learned a lot from each other. I grew a tremendous amount of respect for her. And I know that this has been an interesting season for you, but more than that, I think you have in your practice, but also just in your capacity as a carer. We were talking about the Enneagram earlier. And are you a two? I don't know what you are.
I am a full-fledged two. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So for those of you that don't know the Enneagram, that's the helper, the caregiver. I don't know if there's any other better descriptors of that. But I'm thinking about a moment in our historical lives where you or someone you love is going to be ill in the next, maybe they've already been ill, maybe they're going to be ill in the next month, maybe they're going to be ill in the next several years, but it's very likely that you're going to be in close quarters with somebody who is ill, or you're going to be ill yourself, and that is going to place a strain on your relationship. So I want us to spend some time exploring what it means to be a good partner in that context. So that'll be our kind of introduction. Melissa, as you hear that call, that idea of how do we be good partners when one or both of us is sick or injured, what is your initial reaction?
My initial reaction or thoughts are around communication. When we're healthy, that's the time to embark on the conversation around what does support look like for you? So for example, when I don't feel well, I want somebody to be attentive to me. If they see that my glass of water is getting low, they just pick it up and go refill it. Or they come in and check on me and say, hey, do you need anything? Whereas my husband, his needs are very, very different. His expectations are different. And instead of me trying to figure it out, I'm asking him, what does care and support look like for you? So it takes the guesswork out of it, and it requires us to engage in a dialogue, a back and forth about, well, this is what I think would feel really good for me, and this is what I think would feel good for me. Now, whether that be wrestling with pneumonia or the stomach flu, that can look different also. Sure. Or if it's recovering from a surgery or being in the hospital. And also, I think really sharing maybe even some of our fears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think about, for me, it is when I am ill, some of my fears are usually, I'm not always that concerned about, you know, my safety or my capacity to recover, but I am often worried about, it's guilt. You know, I'm afraid that I'm being a bad partner. I feel like I am not pulling my weight. You know, we've got these two monsters at home, also known as children, and I know how much attention they require. And so when I am, you know, laid up with some kind of illness, it's hard for me to say, to feel okay about the fact that that adds additional burden to my wife. So I think part of what you're pointing to is that in a preemptive way, it's valuable to have conversations about this where we say, this is, you know, hey, if and when we experience this dynamic where either I am ill or you are ill, what do we expect of each other? What's that going to look like if I'm in bed and can't get out of bed? What's that going to look like if, in addition to needing isolation, I also need physical support or something along those lines. I mean, so it's sort of running through some of those scenarios. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Absolutely. And I think having that conversation about, and I would also call them, they have angelic moments as well.
Oh, sure.
They're little people.
They're like, they're, you know, if you've seen The Incredibles, Jack.
Oh, yes.
The little baby who turns into a monster when he wants to, but is mostly just super cute. Those are my children.
Yes. And looking into with the shelter in place, what happens if you both become ill? Mm-hmm. And if you can engage in a conversation and say, here's what I can do, here's what you can do. If we both become ill, how do we then in turn care for the children? What's our contingency plan? And that doesn't mean that your plan is going to work, but it means that you're having a dialogue about it and you are being proactive. And in those conversations, you're being curious, recognizing that you may have to pivot. But one of the things that you're talking about is the guilt. And for me, there's a real slippery slope between guilt and shame. And I think
I've heard you speak of this shame thing before. Tell me more about this shame.
So the difference for me between guilt and shame is guilt is meant to tell us I should do something different, or I wasn't my best self in that moment. I could have done it this way. Next time I'm going to, whereas shame is, I am a horrible partner. I'm a horrible father. I'm a horrible mother. It's an I am statement. And when we experience shame, it also has a physiological response within our bodies. But more importantly, when we experience shame, we tend to do a few things. One is either we shrink, we withdraw, we puff up and get really big or loud. Or we just kind of freeze or do what I call turtle up, which is we just pull everything in and we stop communicating, which can be really hard in a relationship and it can feel very isolating also.
So what are the things that you mentioned that it's value to have these preemptive sorts of conversations and that there are all these different contingencies that we could be considering. What happens if I'm sick? What happens if you're sick? What happens if the sickness is this severe, that severe? What happens if we're both sick? What happens if our kids are sick? You know, like looking at those different types of contingencies. It almost reminds me of the horrible process of writing a will, you know, where it's just you have to imagine these terrible scenarios that you never want to see happen. The difference, I think, between, you know, writing a will and trying to articulate these sort of illness scenarios is that these are fairly likely to happen, you know, at some point in our lives. I mean, I already know in the 10 years that I've been married, there's been a handful of times when illness has been a sticking point in my relationship with my wife. So having a conversation ahead of time, what do you see as the sort of check boxes that people can go through in the recognition that everybody's different and certain people are going to need to focus on more things than others? But how would we start to consider the content of those conversations?
So there is a gentleman whose name is Sherrod Miller, and he came up with what he describes as four styles of communication. Mm-hmm. The first style of communication, that's about data sharing. That's where I say to you, I've got lunch ready. Can you go grab the girls? Or I say, we're running low on bread and milk. Do you have time to go to the store or do I need to? The data sharing, that's how we keep the status quo. That's how we keep things moving forward. Style two communication, and this, when we aren't feeling well, can become highly activated where we are feeling more fatigued and maybe not ourselves. And unfortunately, the majority of us communicate from style two, which is a place of you always, you never support me. You never help out. You never take the initiative. And if I'm communicating to you from a style two, make no mistake, it's going to sting because that's my pain, my suffering is coming out at you. So the real work comes from when we can transition into a style three. And this is where there's pause in the conversation. this is where I'm really actively listening to hear what you are saying to me, because I want to understand versus defend. Mm-hmm. When I'm listening from a style two, I'm listening so that I can tell you how you're wrong. Mm-hmm. Versus style three, this is where, tell me more. Help me understand. Why is that a fear for you? Because it may not even be in my awareness wheel, but it's something that's highly triggering for you. And then there's style four, which is, this is where repair occurs. And this is where we're able to communicate our need, which is, I'm experiencing the kids as being out of control today. I don't feel well. I'm running a low grade fever and I feel stretched thin. Mm-hmm. And I see you over in your office area working and on Facebook, and I'm left over here running around. So I'm feeling like I'm responsible for everything and I'm feeling abandoned. I need your help. Can you help me in? So if we can transition away from you statements to I statements, which would be, I experience, I feel, I need.
So part of this is beyond just the, you're describing the process, right? The ways that we need to be approaching the conversation, regardless of the content, the process needs to be oriented around understanding. I want to try to have a clearer sense of your experience. I want you to have a clear sense of my experience with an eye toward a horizon in which we are connected, united, et cetera. So part of how we do that is by communicating sort of from our space. So I statements, I position, I need, I experience. What was the third one you said?
I feel.
It's funny. I think she's smirking because she knows that feeling is something that I often forget to do. So it's funny.
No, that's happening under the surface. It may not be what you privilege.
Fair enough. The feeling is happening. I just forget to name it and acknowledge it. So you mentioned that we're going to need to have conversations about sort of the types of things that we need. You know, you mentioned that you might need your glass of water to be refilled without having to ask. That might not be what your partner is paying attention to. So as you consider that, what are the things that, you know, the types of things we can consider, the types of dynamics that are going to be at play that we can have some foresight about and say, so we're in like style three, style four communication. And what are we actually going to talk about? What kinds of things are we going to be addressing in ourselves and in our partners to make sure that we're on the same page?
So if I'm approaching it from a style three and I'm talking about what is it exactly that feels like care and support for you, should you be ill? Mm-hmm. And so my husband's response might be something like, I just need you to check on me periodically, leave me alone. And also, to your point earlier, maybe it's giving him permission to not get up and do.
Yeah.
It's okay, babe. You don't feel well. Just your only job right now is to take care of you. And I don't want you pulling yourself up and doing it by your bootstraps and doing it anyway. I want you to listen to your body. I want you to honor, I've got the other, because there may be a day when I need you to take care of it so that when I'm down, so we can tag team it.
I think that that's such a, very few of us want our partners to feel guilty about taking time for caring for themselves. But I think we sometimes underappreciate how important a role we can play in mitigating that feeling of guilt in them, or, you know, as it could escalate to a feeling of shame. You know, just the simple statement of, hey, I know you're sick. I just want you to know that I've got all this handled. And what is most important for me as your partner in this moment is that you care for yourself. I don't need you. Things aren't falling apart without you. we're going to make it work. That those types of statements we often feel are, they're assumed, right? It's like, oh, well, of course I feel all those things. Of course I want them to get better. But hearing it makes a difference in terms of our lived experience, especially when we recognize that when we are ill, we are already on a deviation from our normal path. So I think we have to, it's almost like an all bets are off kind of moment, and say whatever else might feel routine, might feel assumed in a normal context, we want to make sure that we articulate, that we reiterate, that we say, hey, I just want you to know, because it might feel like under these extenuating circumstances, you should feel guilty. But the reality is, I really do need you to get better. And this is interesting as we're having this discussion, because this, I'm telling my wife, who I know will listen to this podcast, that this is what I need to hear. So my wife and I are sort of having this conversation in this sort of asynchronous way. So communicating, I think, those expectations, I think, is part of what you're naming. I think that there's value in sort of negotiating our, or at least naming our tendencies toward asking for help and receiving help, you know, giving help and all of those things. You know, I am personally more inclined to give help even when that help is not what's best for me or what's best for my partner. And so if we say that right up front, if we say, hey, you know, just so you know, if you're sick, I'm going to want to help like crazy. That's where I'm going to be oriented toward. And what's that going to be like for you? Is that going to be more distressing to you, or is that something that you can receive, and how can you receive it best? So sort of, you know, we in the outline that you sort of put together for this, there's asking for help, receiving help, and giving help. And I think swirling around all of these is a conversation not only about our sort of standard operating procedure, but also how we think those standard behaviors are going to flow in the space of illness. Would you concur?
I would. And I think for many of us, you know, I'm referring back to the Enneagram again. And I think for some, the like being a type two, I will pretty much go out of my way to make it all about you. Mm. And my work, my personal work, has been around identifying what is it exactly that I need, and how can I go about taking care of myself? Because sometimes what happens is if we start taking care of other people, and let's say, for example, you haven't asked for it. Mm-hmm. And then when you don't realize that I've expended all of this energy in caring for you, which you didn't ask for, but mm-hmm. I've done, assuming that that's what you wanted, and I don't get positive feedback or any mm-hmm. kind of acknowledgement or appreciation, I know resentment's going to roll in. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to start feeling unappreciated. It's going to start sliding out sideways. I'm going to start communicating to you from a style two, as opposed to me recognizing this is my tendency. I tended to be a caretaker of other people. And instead of being curious and asking, would this be helpful for you? It seems like, or what can I do for you in this moment? Mm-hmm. Now I'm empowering you to give voice to what you're experiencing and what you need.
Yeah.
And also recognizing that for some of us, asking for what we need is, number one, super scary. Number two, we're not really good at it, because it means hitting pause for a minute and acknowledging where we're at and what we're feeling physically, mentally, and emotionally. Mm-hmm. And if there is anything that the shelter in place, I think, has given us, it is an abundance of opportunity for time and self-reflection.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you mentioned this tendency to help as a two. And incidentally, you've just opened the door for a 9 to 12 part series on the Enneagram that I'm going to do with you now. And as a two, I know you'll oblige.
I love it.
But I think that to me signals moments like this point us toward conversations that wouldn't it be wonderful if we were having all the time anyway? Because whether we're talking about I've got COVID-19 and I am just exhausted and in bed recovering from a debilitating illness, or I'm having a hard week at work and I am just stressed to my limit and I need help. You know, what would it look like to check in regularly and ask the questions, hey, how can I be most helpful to you? Here's how I'm inclined to be most helpful to you. And am I, you know, how do I sort of orient my tendencies toward your actual felt needs? And allowing that to be a two-way conversation, one where there's a lot of permission giving, where there's a lot of grace, and where we're seeking to understand, where we're communicating from our experience versus making, you know, declarations or proclamations about the other person's character or what they always do or don't do. What a beautiful paradigm that would be. Now that's idyllic, right? That's not
right.
How it usually works. But moments like this call us to take a closer look at that. Part of the reason why you and I are engaging in this exercise is to say your context, you listener, you person that's a part of a relationship, your context is pushing you to consider how you understand your own needs, how you communicate those needs to your partner, how you understand your partner's needs, and how you receive them when they communicate them to you. And so hopefully this has given you the sort of broadest of overviews of how you can engage in that process to come to that deeper understanding. And we hope that it is, you know, a useful tool and that ultimately it's unnecessary, that you're never sick again for the rest of your life, but you will be. And so in that reality, we think that this is a good starter. Melissa, anything that you wanted to make sure that we covered that we feel like we missed?
You know, as I'm listening to you talk about the daily conversation and connection, communication, one of the things that I will ask couples to do is getting into a habit on a daily basis of just give me a scale, 1 to 10, 10 being the best day ever, 1, I just walked through Hades. And if you can check in with each other during this time and then post shelter in place, 1 to 10, babe, how was your day? If they're telling you their day was a 2, that's really helpful data, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And then if you're at a 7, that lets them know, okay, well, maybe I have the ability to pick up a little more slack. Why don't you go take a bubble bath or you go for a walk? I've got the kids or I've got dinner, whatever that may be. Another thing that I will ask people to do is just carve out 10 minutes a day. And once you say 1 to 10, you take 5 minutes, and this is not a dialogue, this is a monologue. And it's just sharing for 5 minutes why you're the number that you are. So some people will say, but what if I can say it in 2 minutes? And I say, okay, then sit there in silence for the remaining 3. So if you tell me you're a 7 and you share all of the wonderful things as to why you're a 7 for the day, and then I share that I'm a 2 and I'm sharing with you, I feel like you abandoned me today, da 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 da, and I'm going into all of the reasons why I feel, you don't get to rebut my answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anybody that's 5 or below, a beautiful question is, how can I support you? What do you need from me right now? And then the job is to listen. And it's not just listening to understand. That's the first step, right? And then the next one is checking in. What did you hear me say? Because there are times when I think I'm being abundantly clear and just bloody brilliant. And my husband will say, okay, so you're telling me it's all my fault. No matter what I do, it's not good enough. And no, that's not what I mean. Let me try again. And so it may mean having this conversation that should take 5 or 10 minutes, and it ends up being 45, but it's circling back and it's staying connected. And it's really, communication should be a teeter-totter. But if you can find a way, even under the same roof, checking in 1 to 10, where are you at today, babe?
What I think is most interesting is that you and I are working from this sort of, I would almost say it's a bias of, oh yeah, well, to do these things that healthy couples do, you got to talk to each other. And there may be some couples listening who are like, talk to each other. How do we do that? When do we do that? What is that going to look like? And so part of what you're describing is, oh yeah, we should probably say that you need to be talking to each other, you know, on a regular basis. And then this is a conversation that you can have within the framework that you build for one another, you know, to have regular conversations. Well, that'll wrap us up for today, ladies and gentlemen. Do not worry. Melissa will be back because I insist that she is back.
I hope I get to come back.
No, you're tremendous. Melissa, if folks want to get connected with you, get in touch with you, find out more about your work, how could they do that?
They can Google me. I have a website, kinchelotherapy.com, kinchelotherapy.com. Or you can email me at melissaktherapy@gmail.com.
Melissa is the type of person who, if she wasn't a close friend and colleague, that I would ask to be my own therapist. But because she's a close friend and colleague, I can't do that. We'll talk about dual relationships another day. So anyway, that'll do it for us. Melissa, we sign out by saying be well. So I'll say some words of goodbye, and then you can say be well in just a moment. So you can find information about my practice at talkingwithjames.com. Really appreciate you joining us. We will see you back here on Friday for our Friday episode. Until then,
be well. Bye.